Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
And welcome to the Back Brief. I'm Rod Rodriguez. Today we're going to talk about some stories that have hit the headlines. In the military world and the vet story world, our headlines are a little bit different from most other popular news. Right now, the world is wrapped up in COVID vaccines, the elections, and whatever celebrity is sleeping with the next celebrity, whatever cat video just made, 6 million hits on YouTube. That's the world of conventional media. We're alternative media. We're not that alternative, but our headlines are a little bit different. And one of the stories that really kind of penetrated both worlds was the recent murder of a Delta Force operator. And as my guest here, Jack Murphy, will explain, this story had a bunch of layers. And he uncovered some amazing things, some tragic things from this story. A little bit later, we're going to talk about that three-star general Air Force, the Kraken, the 305th. A lot of you had some very strong opinions about the video that Jack and I did. So we're going to address some of your concerns, some of your comments in our YouTube. I went comment creeping, harvested them, threw them in a little bag, and I brought them back. I'm going to put that bag down. We're going to open it up, pull each one out, look at it. We're going to give your comments attention. I'm not even sure if this is a good idea, perfectly honest with you, because some of those comments, man, y'all mean. Just mean. Also,
are you new to the internet, Rod?
I feel it wasn't just mean. It was weird. Like the concept that I'm making some type of like money off of or I'm benefiting off of calling someone's idea a conspiracy theory, or that you and I are on the take. We are part of some global message. Maybe I am an unwitting stooge.
I'm always impressed by people who think that, I write this or that article to cash in. They don't understand. I've been paid a salary as a journalist ever since the beginning. So like I can write about, veterans playing shuffleboard at a retirement home, or I can write about the latest secret JSOC operation and I get paid the exact same amount of money. It doesn't make any difference to anything, but people have their own internal narratives, right? If they read something in the news they don't like, they have to come up with a story. Well, why did that guy write that?
So true. But before we get too far into the Kraken and the fun, I call it the fun stuff. We're going to go, I know, right? Let's backtrack a little bit because this story is pretty tragic. And it's really about culture, isn't it? Like the way that we perceive our Delta Force, our elite soldiers inside of the army, do they have a license to kill? What is happening inside of this very, very insulated community of warriors? What's going on there?
Well, yeah, you're right. It is at its heart an issue of culture, and it's an issue of culture with our most elite soldiers and our most elite units that have been essentially constantly deployed for the last 20 years. They've been rotating back and forth overseas. These guys have worked very, very hard. They deserve a lot of credit for their hard work, but it has also put wear and tear on these units. And as we talked about previously, in particular related to traumatic brain injuries and blast exposures, a lot of these guys have issues, medical issues that are not no fault of their own, TBI and PTSD and things like this. And it raises questions about where the culture is at, where the men are at.
So tell us a little bit about the murder. Who murdered who? And there's some history behind this.
Yeah, so this is a complicated story, but I'll try to break it down. On December 2nd of this year, so that's this month, one soldier and one veteran were found dead at a training area on Fort Bragg. Their names were Master Sergeant William Levine, who was a Delta Force operator, publicly credited or listed as being assigned to United States Army Special Operations Command. The second is a Army veteran named Timothy Dumas, who was a property book manager at 7th Group and 7th Special Forces Group, and then went on for the last like decade, was a property book manager at Fort Bragg at an unspecified unit. And then he retired just a few years ago. So these two men were found dead at this training site. In my questions to Criminal Investigations Division at Fort Bragg, all they are telling me or any other reporter is that this is being investigated as a homicide. So there's a lot more to learn there. I'm going to avoid speculating on that right now. But what did come out of this, something that I stumbled upon as I was investigating this, was that Levine was involved in killing another soldier in 2018. And so one of the soldiers who was found dead on Fort Bragg this month, back in 2018, had shot and killed a Green Beret, a Special Forces soldier, who he was his best friend.
So Levine is found dead, correct?
Correct. This month.
This month. And this is connected, maybe connected somehow, but we do know that he was involved in another homicide. He shot and killed another Green Beret. The right. story that I understand is he told authorities this other Green Beret was coming at him with a screwdriver and he had to put him down. But yet, the screwdriver wasn't found at the murder at the scene of the murder was found outside. A screwdriver was found outside near his car. What it, does anything seem connected between these two events? I mean, there's it doesn't seem like they are that far apart.
At this time, there's no direct connection. There's no direct link that I've been able to find or that I can discern. Master Sergeant Levine had run-ins with the law, had some issues going on in his personal life. And that's something that's consistent throughout the years, right up until his unfortunate, what is apparently a homicide, his killing at Fort Bragg. But I don't know that the shooting in 2018 is directly related to what happened in December 2020. That I don't know.
We do know that there was a witness to that that first murder of the Green Beret. There was a witness to that, and that was the Green Beret's daughter. She saw the whole thing. In light of this new death, has she said anything publicly? Has she come forward to say, you know, give her opinion on these recent deaths?
So, yes, the only remaining living witness, because now Mark Levine is deceased. The Green Beret who he shot in 2018, named Mark Leshikar, of course, deceased as well. This means that the only living witness is Mark Leshikar's daughter, who was about 5 years old at the time that he was killed, that her father was killed in front of her. Just to go back through the sequence of events, this was March 2018, they had been on vacation in Disneyland with Mark's wife and both of their children, Mark's daughter and Levine's daughter. They came back from Disney World in Florida. On the way back, Levine's statement to the police was that Mark was acting paranoid, that he thought they were being followed, that he thought people were listening to them and things like this. They get back home. Mark began working on his car in the driveway of Levine's residence in Fayetteville, North Carolina. Levine and Leshikar had some sort of altercation at that point, like out in the driveway, that turned into like a wrestling match. But it's unclear what that argument was about. No one seems to know that. Levine then goes inside his home with both of the daughters with him inside the house, and he locks the door. Leshakar then comes up to the door to get in. His daughter is, from what I've been told, she was afraid of the way that Levine, or Uncle Billy as she knew him, was afraid of the way that Levine was acting. She was scared. So she unlocked the door for her father to come back inside. Now we get into the daughter's account, because the daughter has begun to speak about what happened ever since she found out that Levine was killed. I know this, I would not talk to a minor because of the ethical issues involved in something like that, but her grandmother and her aunt relayed this information to me, that this little girl has begun speaking about her father's death since finding out that Levine was killed. She said that previously she had never really talked about it because she was afraid that Levine would also come and kill her mommy. And so she was scared of him. The story she has told her family members is that her dad came inside and he was mad. He came inside the living room, dining room area, and that Levine opened fire on him. That Levine started shooting at him. She says her dad fell to the ground. She actually mimics, this little girl mimicked for her family how her father crumpled down to the ground. And she said that Levine kept firing at him. And from her point of view, you know, she looked down at her father's face and knew he was dead. And she said that that her father had pushed her out of the way. Like, as he was walking towards Billy, he pushed her out of the way. And in his daughter's mind, she believes that the last thing her father did was save her life by trying to protect her and push her out of the way. Now we can get into the physical evidence if you're interested to hear about that.
Yes, because I'm trying to figure out, like, there had to be some physical evidence to support one of these two narratives, either one that this guy was outside working on his car, lost it, got into an argument, turned physical. Levine goes in the house, locks the door. He's trying to protect himself and the children. The guy breaks through and he takes deadly action. The other side of this argument is that Levine, it sounds like one side of this could have been Levine went inside, tried to barricade himself with the kids. Leshakar is able to make his way in there and gets, he's murdered by Levine in cold blood. What did the physical evidence say?
So the physical evidence, I've reviewed the medical examiner's report and the autopsy report. So Levine opened fire with a 45 caliber handgun. He fired four shots. Three of the four struck Leshakar. One was in the neck area, and then lodged in his back. Another one was in his side, hit him in the side. And then a third shot, was a grazing wound on the neck. It was at about a 45 degree angle. Interestingly, the medical examiner notes that the shot was from back to front. So the shot traveled from behind towards the front. When the medical examiner looked at the body at the scene and rolled the body over, there was no screwdriver. Now, why this matters is because there's a big part of Levine's statement was that Leshakar attacked him with a screwdriver, that he was brandishing a screwdriver and came and attacked him with it. And that's why he used his handgun to open fire and kill Leshakar. The medical examiner did not find a screwdriver on the scene. What's interesting also is the bullet fragments. There were bullet fragments found in the kitchen and dining room, the kitchen and living room area. There were also bullet fragments found under the carpet. Now, what this appears is that it supports the daughter's statement that Leshakar hit the ground after the first two shots and that Levine fired at least one more shot, an insurance shot or a coup de grace, if you will, to make sure that he was dead. That's it, so the daughter's statement and the ME report appears to make sense with one another. They appear to be consistent. Now there, I also have a document from the Army. The Army did what's called a line of duty report to see it determines that Leshikar is not at fault for his death, that he did nothing to bring this upon himself. And actually the manner in which he gained entry to the residence mattered, because his daughter was locked inside and she opened the door for him to come back inside. So he did not break in. His daughter was locked inside the house. And that was one part of it, that he was and how they determined that he was not at fault here because of those circumstances. It also had the Army report references the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office report, which I don't have access to because Cumberland County Sheriff's Office will not give me that incident report. They say they will not give it up without a court order. So I would have to hire a lawyer and petition the courts down there and have the judge subpoena it. Otherwise, I can't see it. But I do have this Army document that they had access to that report, and they cite it inside their own report. And they also say law enforcement did not find a screwdriver in the house. Where Leshikar was killed, there was no screwdriver. It was not found. Later on, I was told there was a screwdriver out in the garage, out where Leshikar was working on his car, where you would expect to find a screwdriver. There was no screwdriver inside the home, according to, at this point, it's documented by several different sources. So now we're starting to run into some problems here. There are also other inconsistencies, things that don't make sense. Levine made the statement that he couldn't see Leshikar's hands at one point. But if you can't see his hands, then how do you know that he's brandishing a screwdriver? It's indicated in the report, in the documentation I have, that Levine initially said that Leshikar killed himself and then changed his account. There were enough inconsistencies in there that the Army and the Army report, they deemed that Levine was not credible and that his words were not credible. However, the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office ruled this as a justifiable homicide. There was a CID investigation done as well on post, and they reached the same conclusion as the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office. Now, it just defies belief. The things I just said contradict one another in that how can this death be a justifiable homicide, but Levine also not be credible? How can Leshikar be determined to have died in the line of duty and to have not done anything to warrant his own death, yet it's also ruled a justifiable homicide? And we keep coming back to the same issue here. Where is the screwdriver?
So let's flash forward. This has happened to Levine. Now, let's assume for a moment that this was a justified killing. Levine defended himself. We flash forward a couple of years, 2020. You're out there shooting with your property book manager. What happened there?
I don't know that they were out there shooting.
You know what? I take that back, because I saw the picture of him all kitted up. It looked like he was out shooting. You know, I just made that assumption in my head. But tell us a little bit about the current death. So Levine is dead. This other guy's dead. What happened?
Levine and Dumas. I don't know what happened. And I want to be very careful about not speculating about what happened at this point. We just know that they are. That Levine and Dumas were found dead this month at the training site. Exactly how that happened, we don't know. It is being investigated as a homicide investigation, which means presumably there's still a killer on the loose. The only point I would say on that is, I think that Leshikar's death is horrible and tragic, and it does not appear that justice was served in his case. However, I'd also point out that Levine is also someone's son. He's someone's teammate and someone's friend. And I'm sure the same is true of Dumas, and their killers should also be brought to justice.
This gives us an unprecedented view inside of the world of Delta Force. These are operators whose identities are often kept secret. These are guys that don't go out there and advertise themselves like, hey, I'm a Delta Force guy. It's not till years later after they retire that typically that we'll hear that of their experience or where they served. What type of reaction are we seeing from the special operations community, from the Delta Force community? What has this murder done? What kind of shockwaves has it sent out?
My impression is that everyone's circling the wagons right now. Even normal sources who I speak to are like going to comma silence on this. People do not want to talk about that. And I'm not at all surprised. I think it's quite typical of JSOC to want to circle the wagons and squash this. And they will, the command will sweep this under the rug if they're able to. Fort Bragg will sweep this under the rug if they're able to. It's a very closed off culture. You're dealing with clandestine units and secret operations. And the nature of secrecy recluses units and individuals from the normal sort of peer review that they would otherwise have. And I think Joint Special Operations Command enjoys that luxury. I understand the need for secrecy and the need for classification, of course, but that secrecy and that sort of insular nature of these units also leads to the potential for abuse. I don't think that this incident is atypical of Delta Force or of JSOC. I think this is an aberration. It's not normal. But it does point to deeper problems, especially when you see that you had the death of Leshikar. The investigation looks like it was a cover-up more than it was an investigation. And Levine was able to continue serving in USASOC. There doesn't appear to have been any repercussions of that. There were other brushes that Levine had with the law. There's a lot more we could get into there. It becomes a question of accountability. And if the accountability stops, then you'll have a rot within the unit that will get worse and worse over time.
I'm also concerned about the recent Fort Hood Independent Committee review findings that showed the CID agents on Fort Hood that had been assigned to investigating a number of different criminal activity, they were severely understaffed and underexperienced. They were talking about out of the 30 or 40 different agents, only three had more than 2 to 3 years of experience. Even the chairman of that committee stated something along the lines of it was like putting freshly graduated FBI agents from Quantico into the New York field office. Now, that's Fort Hood. But I think that we can probably take Fort Hood and say, well, this is probably what, if this is happening at Fort Hood, the largest installation in the United States Army in terms of training area, it's probably true in other places like Fort Bragg, Fort Stewart, you know, larger bases, larger forts. I worry, or I'm concerned, I should say, I am concerned about the state of the CID force at the time of Leshikar's murder and the current state of its force as they investigate Levine's murder.
I mean, I have very little faith at this point, to be honest, just based on what I've learned so far. The investigation was almost like a non-investigation from what I've been able to tell. And I FOIA'd the CID investigation specifically. I don't know if they're going to give it up or not. I think it was very interesting that CID had access to the Cumberland County Sheriff's Office police report, and they were under specific instructions not to share that police report with the victim's mother and sister by name. They were by name. Do not show this or give it to them.
That's super suspect. That is super suspicious, but I'm willing to entertain that maybe they had a reason. I think it really comes down to what is in that report.
What isn't in it?
There you go. There could be connections here. But to your point, there's a lot of speculation. I don't want to take away from the fact that there are three people dead here. Mm-hmm. Leshkar passed away a couple of years ago. Levine and the property book manager, I can't remember his name right now, it escapes me.
Dumas,
thank you. To your point, these are soldiers. They are people that serve their country. Levine, you know, to become a Delta Force operator is not easy. That takes a lot of dedication, a lot of sacrifice, personal sacrifice to reach those goals. Somebody's kid, somebody's brother, somebody's uncle. So my heartfelt condolences to the families of the people that have passed away. Justice has to be served, must be served. I think that's an important aspect to this. Like, we have to figure out what actually happened. I hope and I pray that CID is, you know, they're I'm sure the people that are there mean to do well. I don't think anybody goes to CID like, man, I'm so glad I'm at CID. I get to kick my feet up on this desk and relax. I think that they're trying. I want to believe there's integrity inside of these organizations, that if they're asked to cover something up, that they will say, no, I will not do that. And the truth will be uncovered. But we'll see. Jack, you wrote the full story on this, and that is at connectingvets.com, correct?
Yep.
Awesome. We'll put the links to the story in the show notes and leave your comments below. What do you think happened? Is there another way for us to get this police report from Cumberland other than having to go hire some fancy attorney to go out there and write some stuff?
I mean, there's the possibility that CID gives it up as part of the FOIA request, but I think whatever I get from CID is just going to be black magic marker streaks. I think they're probably going to give up very little, but we'll see. Otherwise, we'd have to get a lawyer and go down there and try to pry it out of them.
Folks, when we come back, we are talking about the Kraken. We're going to lighten the story up a little bit. We're going to lighten the mood. We're talking about a three-star general. We talked about this guy before, and Jack was on the offensive. I'll be honest with you. Jack was being completely one-sided. He is a shill. I'm gonna expose Jack when we come back from the break. And welcome back to the Back Brief. I've got Jack Murphy here. I promised you I was going to expose him for the shill that he is. He is working for... The deep state. He's working for the man. So, Jack, very quickly, give us a rundown of this video that you and I did about the who is this three-star general and what was his big claim that we recently talked about.
Wow. Well, yeah, we did like a 40-minute video, I think, about retired Lieutenant General Thomas Macerny. Macerny was he flew in Vietnam. He, you know, had this meteoric rise through the Air Force, retired in the 90s and became a Fox News military consultant. He's a big war hawk, shilling for the war in Iraq. He was part of the military analyst program in the Pentagon that helped them sell the 2003 invasion. And he went on television many, many times, making completely ridiculous claims. I mean, we really get into it in the video about all the weird stuff that he had gotten into over the years. But the latest and greatest is, he got fired from Fox News finally after saying some derogatory things about John McCain, the late senator. But the latest thing that Macerny said that was controversial was he was talking about the Kraken, which is, in his words, the 305th Military Intelligence Battalion, which supposedly did some sort of like raid on a server farm in Frankfurt, Germany, that the CIA was running to subvert the election and steal the vote from President Trump. So that's kind of the latest and greatest that he's been on.
So I want to read to you some of the comments that we received about our video about your comments, not about mine, because I remained completely objective. I'm kidding. I kind of jumped on that train too, but I did not receive as much criticism as you did. So let's jump into it, man. Jemmy Joyland said, so I'm going to try and read this the way I think that she meant it. So who to believe? Why should I believe you? The three-star general is a liar, according to you. What makes me to believe that you, not a three-star, say the truth? Dilemma. And I think you post this video exactly for this reason, to cause a dilemma state. What do you have to say to that? I mean, you aren't a three-star general to my knowledge, Mr. Jack Murphy. Why should we believe you? You're just a journalist. You're a former Green Beret, but you're not a three-star general. This guy is. I mean, if he's a three-star general, he should probably know what the hell he's talking about.
Yeah. Well, that's a general appeal to authority type of argument that they're making, which I understand to a certain degree. And that's why these big news shows, Fox News and others, they hire all these people as military consultants, law enforcement consultants. So you have the person on there and it says after their name, CIA. FBI. And presumably that person knows what they're talking about and they're telling the truth. And, you know, there are some great people, obviously, who come out of the military, the CIA, the FBI. Some of them, though, are batshit crazy. Not all of them are credible. In that video, we talked about Michael Schur, who's a big QAnon guy. He served decades in the CIA. McCartney, retired Air Force general, should be a very credible guy, but he isn't. I think you could just look at the person's track record and see that they're not a very good analyst, that their judgment is not very good, to put it politely. I mean, I don't think you have to believe me. It's not even a question of believing me or not. Go and you can confirm with the United States military itself that the 305th Military Intelligence Battalion is a training battalion. It's for essentially basic trainees. It's the advanced individual training that that soldiers go through as part of their initial entry training into the military. That you don't have to take my word for it. This isn't me saying this. It's the United States military saying this. And go ahead and talk to anybody who is in military intelligence, anyone who graduated from any of those courses, that they're going to tell you the same thing. So I'm not trying to like say I'm Jack Murphy. I was, you know, this Green Beret once upon a time. Therefore, everything I say is true. I think you should believe the things I write because they're fact checked and because I get my ducks in a row and cross my T's and dot my I's. And if I don't, then you're right to call bullshit and say, what are you talking about, Jack?
And doesn't it, I think that you hit on something here. You are fact checking, you line your ducks up in a row, cross your T's, dot your I's. The problem, I think, comes from the idea of what do we consider ducks in a row? How do we define cross T's and dotted I's? Now, it may seem obvious, it may seem like common sense, but some folks don't see it that way. I think some folks are looking at what constitutes my ducks in a row differently than from what you are considering.
Yeah, I think that it's also very confusing for the public because they'd say like, okay, here's this guy McCartney, who's a general, and here's this guy Jack Murphy. He was an SF guy. I guess he's for real. Like, which am I supposed to believe? If you see someone on TV who has the three letters CIA after their name, should I believe this guy? Should I not believe them? How do I make that determination? And in my case, as a reporter, I'm fortunate that I know enough people and have enough contacts, I can make some phone calls and start to try to figure it out, even though it's a challenge for me. And I think about this a lot. It's a challenge for me a lot of times to find out what the hell is really going on. Now imagine the average American who they just read up they open up the paper, they turn on the television, and it's like a blank slate. It's like, where do you even begin with that to try to discern what's real and what isn't? So I get it. I understand. I mean, we live in a very confusing, turbulent world in so many ways.
From Michael Moore, not the Michael Moore you probably think, but this is probably a different Michael Moore. It appears you have a conspiracy theory about a conspiracy theory. Vid could have been briefer if you had just said, I don't believe it, I suppose you view all the Dominion information as debunked as well.
I mean, I'm not an expert on Dominion voting machines, and I never made any claim. That's probably why I didn't make any claims about it or really talk about them. I haven't seen anything that I claim credible. We'll actually get into that a little bit as far as this affidavit. It's just like, hey, show me the evidence and we'll deal with it. And even if it's something I don't like, I mean, we'll address the evidence. Right now, it seems like the federal court system is addressing the evidence and they're not finding a whole lot there.
Let's talk a little bit about evidence, because Neil Burney wrote in regards to the video.
Neil Burney,
not accurate. And how do you know this? See the details of a secret. See the details of a secret operation. I'm assuming they are hard to come by, and I think the retired general might know more than you. So I think what Neil Burney is trying to get at here is this is that assuming this operation did go down, this secret computer was secret server was taken down, big raid, people died, that you and I would not know the details of a secret operation, that what the general is saying comes from his access to this information, his years of experience, that he is bringing a secret. He's talking about a secret operation that you and I have no idea about. And that just by saying, well, the 305th is a training battalion, that maybe they're not a training battalion. Maybe there's aspects of the 305th that are operational. Maybe that's the perfect place to hide a secret intelligence cell in the place where nobody will go look, a training battalion.
Yeah, again, it's an appeal to authority, and we're being asked to just take it on blind faith that this guy McInerney has these awesome sources and that he knows something that we don't because he's a general. Okay, but if he has sources, where's the evidence?
But isn't it possible that we're wrong? Isn't it possible that the government is hiding a secret crack intel team inside of a training battalion? Because that's the last place anybody would look. And I mean, isn't it possible that he is telling the truth and we're the ones that are wrong?
You know, it's always possible that I'm wrong. It's always possible that that commenter is wrong. It's always possible that any of us are wrong at any given time. I mean, statements like that don't really say too much to me. Again, it just goes back to like, where is the evidence? If McInerney has these sources, where was this server farm in Frankfurt? Like, what's the address? Like, let's go there. Let's see if there's like expended brass, expended shell casings on the floor and like blood splotches on the walls. Who worked there? Who are these people? What were their names? Well, who were these soldiers that hit this facility? I mean, a claim without evidence, without the details, doesn't really mean anything. And McInerney's not going to give the details because he knows this shit will fall apart in 2 seconds if he does.
But I'm going to go out on a limb here and say that we can't do that. So if we show up to Germany, we're like, this is the spot. We're going to find it's clean. Why? Because we sent our people in to clean it. There won't be brass because it was cleaned up. You ask neighbors, we didn't hear a damn thing. Why? Because they've been threatened or they've been paid off.
Again, and this is how conspiracy theories work. The absence of proof, the absence of evidence is just the further evidence that there's something there. And it's exactly the same sort of logic that we've talked about previously in regards to QAnon or the satanic panic, that you know, there were these claims that there were these tunnels underneath a daycare center in the 1980s that children were like smuggled through to ritualistically abuse these satanic rituals and things like this. You go looking under the school, there's no tunnels. Well, you didn't dig in the right place. The tunnels are somewhere else. So the absence of evidence for these types of people, for this type of logic, is that you just didn't look in the right place, that it's not there, or that it's been erased. I mean, this is like a religious belief at this point that this happened. Like, if you're telling me I'm just supposed to take this as an article of faith, I can't. Now, but if you're saying this factually happened, then we need some evidence. You know, in our last story we just talked about, we had a whole conversation about physical evidence and eyewitness statements.
So my last comment to you is from SJ. And honestly, this is probably my favorite comment. Sorry, buddy. Having a New York Times best-selling book lends no credibility to your opinions. You don't get book deals by telling the truth. You get them by championing the, quote, approved narrative. In your first few minutes, you're being quite condescending towards what we might call conspiracy theories. That's in quotes. In the last 5 years, we have learned through Snowden, Assange, and other patriots who leaked illegal activity at great peril to themselves. We've seen Tom Fitton's FOIA declassifications and Trump's declassifications that show that a great deal of the conspiracy theories are in fact facts. Take that, Jack Murphy.
That's a big brain take, right? I don't recall bringing up that I had a New York Times best-selling book. I wasn't making an appeal to authority. So I don't need to lean on that. I don't care. In regards to getting a book deal, I mean, getting a book deal is always nice, but I mean, General McInerney has a book. He had a book deal. Is he just shilling? Like how come these other people can have book deals and you believe them, but I get a book deal and all of a sudden I'm not credible? How does that work? But now you see he's getting off topic and he's just veering off into like all this other stuff. Like if you can't prove the specific subject we're talking about, let's just have this like grandiose conversation about the grand unified field theory of conspiracy. And we're going to talk about all this other shit. I mean, Snowden leaked everything. He leaked the crown jewels. He took off and handed over to the Russians and to journalists. And this conspiracy, I mean, there was one program involving the use of metadata that there are legal questions about. There were rightfully legal questions about the gathering of that data. And apparently that situation has been corrected, thankfully. But Snowden took everything that wasn't bolted to the ground. And these were lawful espionage programs that our government was running abroad. Where is this huge conspiracy that people speak of? Even though everything has leaked, like damn near everything was disclosed, and we still don't have this conspiracy, the proof of this massive conspiracy. But again, you looked for the secret tunnels under the daycare center. You didn't find them? Well, you dug in the wrong place. You know, that conspiracy, all the secret documents, they must be somewhere else, right? All these other stuff, all the State Department cables leak out from Chelsea Manning, all the stuff that Julian Assange leaked. No proof about the JFK assassination. No proof about 9/11. It was an inside job. None of it. Like where is this proof of the Illuminati conspiracy? Or not even proof. Where's a shred of it? Just show me a little piece of it at this point.
Well, I don't know where to begin. I think that a lot of people will say that your argument is completely within the realm of like fact, belief. If you're looking for secret tunnels, you didn't find them. Yes, you dug in the wrong place because you didn't find them. They're over there.
It's a religious belief.
What's wrong with you? If you don't find if the documents aren't here, well, that's because they're not there. It's because they're somewhere else.
They were in another server farm in Frankfurt, Germany.
Server farm. Maybe they are. Here's my problem. And I think this is the problem where a lot of other conspiracy theorists, this is our problem. Is that whenever we say that's impossible, there's no conspiracy there. There's something. There's usually something. It's maybe not as grandiose as satanic child eating or underground pizza pedophilia or even Dominion computers hiding out in German apartments. Sometimes it's a conspiracy of a couple of people to make something that they want happen. We find this happens a lot. even in various murders can be a conspiracy to either cover up the killer, cover up the victims, cover up there's cover-ups and cover-ups. I mean, we just finished having a conversation about a potential, the fact that Fort Bragg might want to cut, if they can, they would cover up a murder. We've seen Fort Hood, again, I'm going to go back to the independent research paper. I don't think they actually say conspiracy, but it's not hard to say. It's not hard to imagine that a lot of sexual assault cases and harassment cases were covered up by change of command. There were conspiracies to protect.
It's a conspiracy of silence in so many ways.
Exactly. So when we see all these conspiracies, we real life shit, we're like, we can point to and go, yeah, those guys covered that up. We hear from a three-star general. We hear from guys with CIA credentials, and they're saying, also this, and what about that? How do we so easily, or how do we, not easily, but how do we dismiss them and not dismiss sexual harassment conspiracies or murder conspiracies?
Well, with facts. And what I mean by that is take Fort Hood. I mean, in the death of Vanessa Guillen, there's a plethora of evidence, of physical evidence that was collected by law enforcement. There's just tons and tons of evidence. And, you know, that doesn't mean that we can convict people in a court of public opinion or anything. There has to be due process and all of that. But there are facts. There is actual evidence in these cases of sexual assault. I mean, even if it's just somebody's a victim statement, that's the beginning of something that you can use as a basis for an investigation. In the case of what General McInerney has said, there's nothing. There's just nothing there. And we'll talk about, you know, in a minute, we talk about where that whole conspiracy came from, and maybe it'll open some people's eyes. But like the evidence is either there or it isn't. I mean, and if there's not even something to nibble on there, then I think you have to dismiss it as a conspiracy theory.
Let's jump into that, because you have alluded to this. You've dropped a couple of hints. You're about to break this story wide open, because we have the source for a lot of this Kraken conspiracy.
Right.
What happened? Who is this guy? Who is the source?
So we're going to get, this plays into General McInerney's statements, but let's go back first and let's say the Kraken lawsuits, that they're known collectively as the Kraken lawsuits. And these are the lawsuits being filed by a lawyer named Sidney Powell, not on behalf of the Trump administration, but acting in her personal capacity as a lawyer, so we're told, to prove that there is widespread voting fraud throughout the United States, that basically spiked the election against President Trump and ruined his reelection campaign. They're trying to prove all sorts of different things, you know, fraudulent voting, the Dominion voting machines, and basically everything that could go wrong did go wrong in their eyes. Some of the affidavits that they have signed are just, the ones I've read are just goofy, to say the least. I read one that was from like a former guy claiming to be former CIA, and all of his sources and his statements were based on articles he read in the New York Times. It's like, what? That's not how evidence works. But one of them, it was actually this guy, Brad Heath, noticed this, one of these affidavits. They had the witness is codenamed in them Spider, and he was supposedly a military intel guy who works with information technology, and he was given all this proof about how the election was rigged. And this guy, this Reuters reporter, Brad Heath, he noticed in the affidavit that Sidney Powell and her legal team released, they refer to this guy by a code name, but then the bookmarks in the PDF, they mistakenly left his real name in. And so that's how Spider's true name, Joshua Merritt, leaked out. It turned out he's this 43-year-old. He does work as an information technology consultant. His claims about being in the sworn affidavit claiming that he was a electronic intelligence analyst under the 305th Military Intelligence Battalion, that has been demonstrated to be false, that he washed out of training. The Army has confirmed this. And Joshua Merritt himself, in an interview with the Washington Post, he said, yeah, I should have, you know, I didn't read the affidavit carefully enough. That was put in there by Powell's legal team. That's not necessarily true, or it's misleading. The affidavit itself, I mean, it's pretty funny, man. It's a bunch of screenshots, like taking on cell phones and stuff like that, of like websites. And supposedly it proves that like votes were overturned in the voting machines. And again, it's like, I don't think that's how evidence works, but this is why it's not just my opinion. That's why these lawsuits keep getting rejected by the courts. And then that brings us to his other statements. He says that the Chinese and the Iranians were deeply involved in rigging the voting machines and hacking the election and all of this. What he does not say is that his former unit that he was in, this training unit, that the 305th Military Intelligence Battalion, he makes no claims that they were involved in raiding a server farm in Germany, or that they were involved in trying to fight Chinese and Iranian involvement in the election. General McInerney does make that claim. So now we have to ask our question, like, did McInerney take this as it's like some sort of Kevin Bacon telephone game that's getting played, that like maybe somebody told McInerney about this affidavit and then he took it and put his spin on it. And I don't know that. It's just, you can see like little breadcrumbs that they don't necessarily meet up, but they have some like commonalities in where they're coming from, because the 305th getting mentioned in this affidavit, Spider's affidavit, and then McInerney bringing it up, but I don't think that's purely a coincidence. But what really helped this conspiracy theory gain traction was on November 12th, Congressman Louis Gohmert said on an interview in Newsmax TV that this company, that it was a Skytel was the name of the company, that their server farm located in Germany had their servers seized by the Army for evidence in voter fraud. And he said that he saw it in like a German tweet in German, or something in German. A friend of mine, a acquaintance of mine, Ross Elder, who he's a former private investigator and continues to investigate some things trying to dispel conspiracy theories. And yes, I use that term, conspiracy theories. He actually traced this back to Patient Zero. He found the German language social media tweet that originated it. The guy's name, it was on Facebook, actually. It was in early November. Luis Alberto Fernandez Vidaud. He's a truck driver in Germany. And he made this post on Facebook. He did not mention the 305th. That got brought in later. But he mentions the story about he tells this story of the U.S. Army seizing these servers from this company, Skytel, to secure them as evidence of voter manipulation out of Frankfurt, Germany. So that's the original post. And this guy, Vidaud, makes this comment as if it's a fact, when apparently it's just something that he made up. He's a truck driver in Germany. That's who this dude is. His social media feed is just filled with QAnon conspiracy stuff. But it gets even worse, as you know, Ross and I looked through his social media as well. He said Vidaud's Facebook timeline is a far-right extremist's wet dream. He was posting anti-Clinton memes as far back as 2015 and jumped onto the QAnon bandwagon in the very early days of its emergence. Anti-immigration, pro-Trump, pro-QAnon, anti-Merkel memes flood his posts. Most concerning, however, is the huge number of pro-Russia, pro-Putin statements, memes, and post shares. Those posts go so far as to share anti-Semitic memes, German-Russian brotherhood organizations, and even several posts praising the Russian nationalist biker gang mercenaries of the Night Wolves. This is that was a statement from Ross, from Ross Elder. And again, I went through his social media as well and saw, yeah, it's a QAnon haven. He's all over it.
First of all, shout out to Mercenaries of the Night Wolves. why do these organizations keep getting all the cool names? Like, I'm thinking, like, God damn it, I wish I'd had a podcast named Mercenaries of the Night Wolves, because this would have been great. So, Jack, what you're saying is that the sources that McErney has, the sources behind McErney's claims are not credible. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes, I'm saying that the sources for this claim, that what McErney said and has been repeated since then about the 305th Military Intelligence Battalion raiding a server farm in Frankfurt, Germany to seize servers involved in election fraud in the United States in the 2020 election, that claim is a combination of a post made by a German truck driver and the affidavit given by this dude, what's his name, Joshua Merritt, that these two claims have been fused together to form an Uber conspiracy.
I like that you said Uber conspiracy. It's German. Anyways.
Yeah.
Das ist gut. So, folks, listen. This is a clear example. Now, I know some of you are going to go back and go, well, he's not just a German truck driver, or no, he's not just an analyst. Smear campaigns. Okay. Maybe they have been smeared and maybe this stuff is okay. That's a little,
you can go check out the social media post embedded in the article.
You can
see for yourself. You don't have to take my word for it.
And we're not taking the word of some New York Times bestselling author. That doesn't mean shit. Quit writing that. But I will say that I think this is a clear example of how somebody with credibility, somebody with 3 stars can follow these breadcrumbs that become real to them. That doesn't mean they're stupid. That doesn't mean that they're bad people. Look, during the last conversation that Jack and I had, Jack even made the point, like, hey, this guy's military experience is pretty amazing. Like, I wouldn't mind having a beer with this guy and having him regale me with stories of his, you know, of his service, because the guy, he earned his 3 stars. 2 ways to see this, folks, and it doesn't make them exclusive. Sometimes these things overlap. One, you can be very experienced. You can have great rank and great, an amazing body of work that you can point at reliably and go, that's me. And it's stellar. You're a stellar dude. You're an upstanding guy. You can also make some mistakes. You can also follow certain paths, certain breadcrumbs. You can go down certain rabbit holes because you're a human being. Human beings make this mistake all the time. We find a story, we find something that interests us on a personal level. And it's so intriguing, so fascinating to us that we might push fact to the side. We might not do the proper due diligence because it's so interesting. We just want to get that message out there.
I think what's fascinating about all of this, Rod, and it's important to point out also, is how quickly this conspiracy spread like wildfire, how it went from a random post in German from a truck driver on Facebook. And that guy doesn't even have very many followers. Okay. That post didn't even have that many likes or shares or anything like that. But that one post, people grabbed onto it, and it was within about a week, it was regurgitated publicly by a duly elected American congressman, and then just took off from there, and was also regurgitated by retired generals, by retired CIA officers. And some of these conspiracy theories end up getting repeated by the White House. It's just amazing how quickly it spreads and gains traction.
I will say the other part to that is, it is completely possible. And again, not exclusive to, you know, consciously or unconsciously pushing facts to the side because you're really into the story. The other part to that is, and I don't want to say batshit crazy because that doesn't mean you're crazy, but I will say that I know people that are really smart, book smart, academic smart, PhD smart, and they've done amazing things in their field, and they believe some really out there ideas as well. I had a friend of mine who will remain nameless, but he was a high ranking, in the Army, you know, Army high ranking guy, officer, a mentor, a really amazing dude, super smart. I've seen him lead. So really, really smart. He also believed he was a wizard. He believed that he could change and manipulate space and time, and that there are rules that govern this. And we had this conversation where I'm like sitting here, like my personal belief system says what you're saying is complete nonsense. Like, this cannot exist. You're out of your fucking mind. But that doesn't mean he's dumb, he's stupid, or a bad leader or a bad person. It means quite the opposite. He's an amazing guy with an amazing academic career, done great things in the military, done great things in the academic world, but he believes something that I am not on board on. I check out. There's no facts that I accept as facts. But to him, he has his facts. He supports his theory by saying, I know it to be true. I don't know. And maybe that's what it all boils down to.
It's absolutely not a question of IQ. That's really not what's going on with these folks. There are people who are Army generals, colonels. There are people who are doctors that jump on board with this QAnon stuff. I believe it has more to do. There's a religious aspect to it. There's a faith-based aspect of it. That something good is going to happen and that all the bad people are going to be punished. There's also, I think that the human mind is a pattern recognition machine. It has to be, that's how we evolved. And sometimes that leads us to connecting dots, which are not connected. And then there's also the need, people want to feel clever. They want to feel special. They want to feel like they're so smart. They figured something out that nobody else has. So there are a lot of people out there, I think they just like being edgelords. I see through the media. I see through the matrix. I see through the illusions. And it's like, man, actually, like, you're the biggest dupe of all. I'm sorry, man. And I get emails and I get phone calls and I get text messages every week from people I know who are very smart, but they're talking about Antifa sleeper cells. They're talking about the election being rigged and Dominion voting machines. And I mean, it's just insane stuff. And I mean, it's in a lot of cases, these are people who I know pretty well. And it's painful to see them go through that.
I will end this with this. I believe firmly, after talking with you and reading all of our messages, by the way, folks, I love your, keep dropping those comments. We want to talk to you. I'm not going to poo-poo on anybody. I'll let Jack do that. But I love reading these comments. This is good. But here's my grand unified theory. It's all Duffel Blog's fault. I believe that if we track all of these theories, even Q, we'll find that these breadcrumbs lead us to Duffel Blog, a Duffel Blog article that got circulated and people took seriously. I've seen it done. I watched a Duffel Blog headline become real news. And people were like, dude, you know, this is a satire.
Oh, you're talking about the one who's like the chainsaw rifle or something?
There's been a couple. There was something along the lines of Sergeant Major of the Army now says that you have to wear four the little shoot me straps, the little running
reflective belts,
like Sergeant Major of the Army says four reflective belts from now on. And people thought he was serious. They were like, what? This is ridiculous. You can't make soldiers go buy four of those things. You're like $20. And I was like, it's a joke. Like you, it doesn't even seem
back in the day before people caught on to that website. They did one article. It was that the Special Forces Regiment was giving Jane Fonda an honorary Green Beret. And dude, it caused an uproar. Like the Special Forces Association issued like a statement about like what bullshit it was. It was unreal.
Folks, thank you for sticking around. Thank you for listening and watching. Hit that subscribe button, man. We want those subscriptions. Want you to be able to hear more of our rantings and ravings. We have other guests lined up here that are going to talk to you about some of the stuff that you're interested in outside of the conspiracy world. Well, maybe inside the conspiracy world. Who even knows? Folks, this was The Back Brief. That was Jack Murphy. You can check out all of Jack's articles. They are at connectingvets.com. Again, connecting dots. That's something else. Connectingvets.com. Go down there. You're going to see all sorts of amazing news stories from the veteran world. Guys, like I said at the top of the show, these are headlines that matter to you. Make sure you're paying special attention to what's going on Capitol Hill. Make sure you're paying special attention to what's going on in some of our more historical stuff. We have some amazing veterans from all wars, all walks of life. And we have some great stories. Connectingvets.com. This was The Back Brief. You can also check out Vet Story. That's available everywhere. You can listen to podcasts. I'm Rod Rodriguez, and I'll see you in the next episode.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.